Hey there. So my name is Sarah. I am part of the peri community. I have gained too much weight in perimenopause and want to know my options. I am considering weight loss drugs. What happens when you go off weight loss drugs? Are they a lifetime commitment?
Welcome to our Perimenopause What the F podcast, brought to you by the Peri community. In this podcast, we talk everything, and we mean everything, perimenopause. We navigate through all our what the F perimenopause moments and all is this normal questions. We talk with perimenopause experts, thought leaders, and inspirational voices of the community. To connect with other perimenopause warriors, download our free Peri app. You can find the link in our show notes. And now let's dive right in.
I'm just going to kick it off and introduce myself. I'm Dr. Disha Narang. I'm an endocrinologist, obesity and culinary medicine specialist, and I'm director of obesity medicine at Endeavor Health, just outside Chicago.
I am Dr. Anisha Patel. I am a board certified physician in obesity medicine, culinary medicine, clinical lipidology, and just recently got my menopause certification as well. And I'm the director of obesity medicine within our transplant department here at Sutter Health in San Francisco. And, you know, just to echo what Dr. Narang said, that we're just really excited to be here with all of you. We understand that there's just so much, you know, like misguided information out there when you're trying to improve your health, when you're trying to learn more about weight management. And we really want to be that evidence-based resource for you, that no-nonsense resource for you to hopefully, you know, take away some pearls and actionable steps from this podcast. So definitely check out part one if you haven't had a chance to.
So much of this is our hormones. So much of this is physiology. And as we had mentioned at the last podcast, it's not a disease of willpower. So it's not because, you know, so-and-so ate too much dessert or just, you know, ate too much in general. There's so much of a neurohormonal component here. There's so much of a metabolic component, so much of a genetic component and environmental as well that is all coming together, you know, to cause either weight loss or weight gain. And so some people might put it on faster than others. We all have, you know, those family members that no matter what they eat, they're going to stay the same weight. And then others, you know, they always say, oh, well, if I look at a cookie, I gain weight. So everybody is sort of set up differently. And so the number one message from both part one now and part two is that this is a chronic disease that we treat long term, and it is not a disease of willpower. And it has so many different reasons for why someone may gain weight. So we want to definitely just start with that.
And we also want to, you know, validate that your symptoms as you transition into menopause are not in your head. They're not in your head. This is true, you know, changes that are happening. This is biology that's happening in your body, and it's not in your head. It's not your fault. You know, you're not doing something wrong to cause these symptoms. I think that, you know, often as women, we're kind of made to feel that we kind of downplay our symptoms, or we don't talk about our symptoms with others because we may feel that they may not take us seriously, or they may not, you know, approach us in a positive manner. And Dr. Narang and I just really want to be clear that, like, we hear you, we see you, we believe you is what we're trying to say.
And I will say, and I think you probably have this as well, every single patient that has presented in our clinics has in some way been shamed by whether it was a family member or someone in their lives. People that present in our clinics have been dealing with this for decades probably, and they've tried every diet in the book. They have tried literally every mechanism. You know, we're often the last resort, and we really shouldn't be. And this is why it's really important to equip yourselves with that knowledge and advocacy so that you can bring this conversation up sooner.
And I think that, you know, when we talk about the weight management treatment, you know, it's not just lifestyle or medicines, right? We really want to be clear that these treatments all go hand in hand. And, you know, Dr. Narang and I really respect our patients' autonomy and their wishes, and we really work with them to try to find the best treatment plan for them. We're not here to push just lifestyle or tell you to go, you know, eat less than, hey, here's a medication. We'll never see you again. That is absolutely like not the way we do. Yeah.
And then the other thing I wanted to say, the other sentiment that we often see is that it's a failure to start on treatment, you know, after trying all these other, you know, diets and things like that. So it's really, really important to understand that long-term success of this chronic disease called obesity or overweight, Long-term success is truly when we marry the lifestyle and the therapeutics together. Research has shown over and over again that lifestyle alone, and that's, you know, like diet and exercise, at best may result in 5 to 6% weight loss. All right. So for some people, that might be adequate and that's completely fine. For others, it may not. And that's okay too, because we have actually mechanisms to treat this.
Yeah. And then the one other thing that we really want to emphasize is that, you know, the treatment is not centered on, you know, achieving a certain body size or shape mm-hmm. or yeah. weight, right? Like I don't give my patients goal weights to achieve, right? No. It's very individualized. We really look at health outcomes and quality yeah. of life. And what yeah. can we do to get our patients there? Because this is about living your longest, healthiest, happiest life.
Right. And, you know, unfortunately, as women, there's numbers all around us, right? Our age, you know, our weight, you know, all these things, right? How many calories we're eating, how many this and that.
When did we start periods? You know, it's like,
it's all these numbers that surround us and actually judge us for everything, right? And so, we really don't care about the number on the scale. That is like literally the least of our concerns. It's important to obviously look at trends. And the reason why is that those trends are associated with improvements in our metabolic risk factors. And metabolic risk factors include blood pressure, cholesterol, you know, diabetes numbers, sleep apnea risk, all these heart disease risks, all these things. So those are the things that we're really looking at. Like, okay, if this person lost such and such weight, what kind of metabolic factors improved with that treatment? You could go from 350 to 300 and that's a win. You could go from 200 to like whatever, 175 and that's a win. It does not matter.
People may not realize that when we talk about weight loss and health outcome improvements, like for instance, you can actually see improvements in blood sugar, you know, anywhere mm-hmm. from as little as 3 to 5% of your weight loss. And when we're talking about yeah. weight, what Dr. Narang and I are specifically talking about actually is adiposity, the medical term for body fat. So we're
fat tissue. Yeah.
Fat tissue. Yeah. That's specifically what we're talking about, right? We are not trying to say that people should lose muscle or other types of lean body mass. That's not what we're looking at. We want to really quantify the amount of fat loss. And we use weight as a surrogate, but again, it's not the end all be all. And by no means is there, you know, any type of goal like weight that people need to be. There's just a lot of misconceptions right. around medication. Right. Yeah.
So let's kind of just jump into some of the myths that we want to bust. And then we're going to kind of talk about the way that the medications work and who might be eligible for them. I'm sure everybody has heard about medications over the last 2 years. They've been all over social media. Everybody talking about Ozempic.
TikTok everywhere.
We've been using these medications or class of medications for almost 20 years. That's when the first GLP-1 agonist was introduced. We have used these agents for 20 years. What has happened is that in the last couple of years, you know, social media, of course, is very powerful in positive and negative ways. But there's been obviously this huge social media takeover of all these people taking Ozempic or, you know, Kim Kardashian or Elon Musk or whoever else, you know, putting on social media that they're taking these medications. And so what has happened is that there has been a national and likely global worldwide demand for these yeah. medications, you know, and the reason why is that people are desperate to get weight off. Now, the number one message I want to say here is that there is no quick fix. We have no magic wands. We have no magic bullets, you know, to quickly get weight off. That is just not something that exists. And so going back to our original message, obesity or weight gain is a chronic issue that needs to be treated long term. So this is not something, you know, and you'll see this all over on social media. Oh, I took this and this is my before, this is my after or whatever. It is not about that. It is not something that we use for, you know, 2-3 months to get into a dress or a bathing suit or something like that. People who take it should expect to be on it for a while.
Yeah. And I think the other messaging that I see on social media is like, if I take the medications, I can just eat whatever I want. That's absolutely not true. These medications, this class of medications has been around for 2 decades, but of course there's been increased attention in the last couple of years. You know, I will say some of that attention is maybe warranted because for the first time, probably in all the history of weight management, when Wegovy was approved, you know, it became our most efficacious treatment. But just to clarify with everybody, Ozempic and Wegovy are the same medication.
Same medication.
But the pharmaceutical company approved Ozempic in 2017 for the treatment of type 2 diabetes at a slightly lower max dose than Wegovy, which was approved for chronic weight management in 2021. So again, same medication, just to be clear. And number two, there's no generics available.
Ozempic is approved for patients with diabetes only. And we'll talk about that in a little while.
Even though it's the same drug as Wegovy, again, this is an insurance issue, not a Dr. Narang, Dr. Patel decision. You know, things are complicated in that realm.
They're the exact same medication. It's all semaglutide. The pharmaceutical company and insurance has designated one for weight management, one name for diabetes.
Yeah, it is. It's challenging. So, yeah. So with these, you know, and of course, we should add on that in November, was it?
Tirzepatide.
Tirzepatide was approved under the brand name Zepbound. I need to make this clear that both Zepbound and Mounjaro are the same medication.
The same medication.
It's like the same thing with, you know, Ozempic and Wegovy, that one is approved for type 2 diabetes. And that's what the insurance companies are going to stick with as far as approval. And one's approved for weight management. So, and I think, you know, people may not understand or realize that, for instance, Wegovy wasn't our first GLP-1 agonist that was approved for weight management. There was actually another one in 2013 named Saxenda, or 2012, liraglutide.
Yeah. Right. Well, so just let's break that down. So liraglutide is marketed as Saxenda for weight management and Victoza for diabetes. So all these medications, they have indications for patients with diabetes under one name and patients who need weight management under another name. There are also, I know, you know, all over the media, we have, you know, GLP-1s and Ozempic and stuff all over the place, but there are other medications that are FDA approved for weight management as well. And they actually can be highly useful for our patients, especially our perimenopause and menopausal patients. And we'll talk about that in a bit. There's been a lot in the media also about compounded substances. There's a lot out there, you know, like med spas and, you know, weight loss centers and things like that. There's a lot of compounding going on. And that has happened, of course, in the setting of these drug shortages, just because there's been unprecedented demand, of course, for these medications, but also the cost, right? These medications out of pocket can be quite expensive. And a lot of different entities, whether they're telehealth companies or weight loss spas and things like that, oftentimes they will offer these like special, you know, concoctions of like semaglutide. And those are absolutely not FDA approved. We have zero safety or efficacy data on these substances. And quite frankly, I don't know what's being put into them. So we need to make sure that we are being as evidence-based as possible and that we are being as safe as possible. We know that there's a lot of desperation, obviously, to lose weight, you know, by 2030, that's in what, 6 years, 50% of our population is going to have a BMI in the obese category or above. This is very, very significant. It's a public health problem. However, we need to make sure that we're treating this in the safest manner. And so we don't agree with compounding with these substances. And quite frankly, there's a lot of legality issues and everything that the pharmaceutical companies have patented these peptides. There's a lot of litigation going on around it.
We want to just say that we understand why individuals may, you know, turn to compounded medications, because it is a frustrating and lack of insurance coverage. The medications are expensive, as Dr. Narang said. We can't find them, you know, in certain doses, and we're not blaming.
Yeah, we get it.
If you're on a, you know, but what we're trying to say is that the compounded medications are not FDA approved. They are usually compounded with another substance, and you may not know what that substance is. There's no way for us to say that this is safe or this is going to actually work. And and it's just not the risk that we're willing to take with our patients, because you know, the potential for harm definitely outweighs any potential benefits.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So that's kind of our two cents on that. And, you know, if there's our questions about that, we're obviously more than happy to answer that as well. So let's talk about how these medications work exactly. There's, you know, tirzepatide and semaglutide work in slightly different ways. Those are two different kinds of hormones that, you know, we can use. And so the way that these medications, just as an overview, when we gain weight or when we even try to lose weight, our hunger hormones go up, right? And so the way that these medications often work is a couple of ways. It works at the level of the brain and it works at the level of the gut. So at the level of the gut, it slows down gastric emptying so that you feel fuller faster. And then at the level of the brain, it helps to block the hunger hormone from talking to your appetite center. The GIP, GLP-1, there's different ways that that works as well. That often works at the level of the fat tissue, the gut, and the brain. But all of these overall help to decrease hunger. It helps to decrease appetite. And in the purpose of use for diabetes, they actually also help to control blood sugars.
Yeah. And I think one, if you go back to maybe our first podcast episode, maybe I think we emphasized that the brain actually plays a huge role in the regulation of body weight. And so the brain is very smart. A lot of these processes are happening without you knowing that they're happening. For instance, you know, you might be like, well, I just ate, but I really want to eat this other thing. And I probably shouldn't do it, but I'm going to. Your brain is very smart. Your brain is smart because it wants to actually, you know, keep you at a higher body adiposity or body fat level. And so it's going to do everything that it can. And I'm going to use the word defend because this is like hotly debated, the defend part, but it's doing what it can to defend that body weight. And so these medications come in, they really level the playing field. I love telling patients that they level the playing field for you so that you can actually feel full and you may not crave certain things the way that you do.
Right. Yeah. And patients will often tell us that, and this is now, you know, people talk about this all over as well, but that like mental chatter, you know, that tells you that, oh, you got to eat, or you really are craving this or that, that chatter gets to be kind of shut down a little bit. That has been game changing for our patients because one of their greatest struggles is that, well, you know, I try to eat healthy or, you know, whatever that may mean for them. But then I constantly have these cravings and the desire to continue to eat.
A lot of this is genetically determined. Like, you know, as far as there are individuals out there that have trouble feeling fuller, and then you can kind of get some of their family history. And it's been something that, you know, has been perpetuated through their entire family history. There's some people that have increased cravings. So again, going back to what Dr. Nguyen said at the very beginning, this is not your fault. This is not, you know, something that you've developed because of, you know, the lack of willpower. This is true biology that's happening. And the medications are there to offset that biology so that you could achieve your health outcomes and health goals.
And again, like, you know, when we said that weight gain and weight loss is neurohormonal, these medications help to basically work with these hormones, right? They mitigate these hormones. And so what happens is that, you know, when we talked about like the long-term success on these medications, when we combine that mechanism of action where, you know, these hunger hormones are being suppressed, when we combine that with an active lifestyle and mindfulness about what we're eating day to day, well, that's when we see true success. Right. I mean, I've had patients now for like 5+ years on these meds. They're different people now. The way that they used to live their lives prior to getting like formal medical weight management, they're literally different people. So the way that they live, like the way they choose to eat, the way they choose to move, like everything is different. I've also had patients not lose any weight on these medications. I've also had patients gain weight on these medications. So again, we want to just emphasize that these are not magic bullets. And it really requires, like, I always tell patients, you know, you're doing 98% and then this resource is about 2% of the job. Yeah. And so, you know, again, we just want to emphasize that it is not a failure of you, you know, working on this day to day and needing like potentially therapy. When we marry the two is when we see that long-term success.
It's really liberating, like Dr. Nguyen said. I mean, it's just, I can't tell you, like when our patients come in, they feel even more motivated to even though after a busy 10-hour day, they get to the gym, you know, they make dinner that night instead of ordering takeout. Like it's just, it's truly a change in life. And I do want to say that, you know, of course, in clinical trials that where these medications are tested, you do see that the majority of individuals respond to a certain degree, but there's inter-individual variability from a person to person. They may not have the same response. If they're doing the exact same thing, they may not have the same response to the medication. Yeah. And again, I don't want you to think like, I'm not trying hard enough or why isn't this working for me? There could be other factors at play. There could be other medical factors at play, other biological factors at play. It's really important to work with a specialist or at least your doctor or healthcare provider to really have these discussions. If you're not seeing any weight loss on these medications, is there something else going on? We've been taught as society that we're doing something wrong, right?
Yeah.
It's not the messaging that's going to come from, you know, doctors like Dr. Nguyen and I.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, gosh, this is just a little bit of an aside, but I've had patients that, you know, constantly tell me, you know, I don't like to share that I'm on this medication. And the reason why is that, you know, they got shamed prior to, you know, their weight loss treatment and everything, obviously for their weight. And now they're getting shamed because they may be on something too. So one is it's insulting, but I think the other is that I think people are also projecting their insecurities onto that individual. And so much of this is like, you know what, like self-care number one, mental health number one / two, keep going. Like that is like the number one thing. And going back to the individual variability, you know, men may respond differently than women as well. Sometimes I hear this all the time because couples will do this, you know, the weight management together often, and women will come in like, well, my husband lost 20 pounds immediately and I'm still like at 5 or something like that. Everyone's bodies are different. So we got to focus on ourselves when we're doing this. And, you know, obviously the studies showed some percentage of weight loss for some people and others not so much. So everyone responds differently. So it's not a one size fits all approach at all. And the other is that a GLP-1 may not even be the right medication for you, you know? Yeah. So I think that conversation with your doctor is so, so important. And oftentimes like women will come in and say, well, I'm doing everything under the sun. Like I'm restricting my diet. I'm doing, you know, a ton of exercise, like et cetera, et cetera. And quite frankly, a GLP-1 might not be a great option for those women, you know, because they're not having those hunger cravings and things like that. And truly it's, you know, good old menopause that is, you know, sneaking up on them, and the metabolism is just different than it was 15 years ago. But we have solutions around that too. And that's exciting.
Yeah. And I think the other thing to recognize is that whenever we have patients that come in and say, oh, I only lost 5 pounds, or I only, you know, lost X amount of weight, we look at other health outcomes too, right? We look at their blood sugar improvement, maybe, you know, their obstructive sleep apnea is better, maybe their, you know, knee pain is better. Like there are other things that we look at as far as measuring success of these treatments.
We don't want people to just focus on the number on the scale. Like we really want to take a holistic approach.
So, you know, these studies with these medications, while they're not indicated for treatment of like high cholesterol, high blood pressure, et cetera, with treatment, long-term treatment with the meds, we've seen improvements in systolic and diastolic blood pressures, your HDL, lowering of LDL. And then, you know, with semaglutide, which is Wegovy or Ozempic, in patients even without diabetes, we saw 20% reduction in cardiac events. Like that's life-saving. That was only with like 9% weight loss that people had that they saw this benefit from a cardiac standpoint. So it may not even be just like weight related. There are other possibly like anti-inflammatory mechanisms going on with the use of these medications. It's actually protecting your heart. So we are seeing more and more positive results from this. And obviously we'll talk about the side effects as well. But, you know, overall, after 2 decades of experience and now obviously approval for medical weight management, these are really, really valuable resources for us.
Yeah. So I'm looking at the chat. One of the common questions that's coming up is how long do I have to be on these medications? That's a question that's popped up a few times.
Yeah. So when we say chronic therapy, we mean long-term.
Yeah.
So theoretically, you can be on these meds for years and continue to do fine. And the one caveat that I want to say to this is that nobody ever asks the question if they need to be on medication long-term for diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol. Those are chronic diseases, just like weight gain or obesity, right? So what happens is that, however, if treat long-term obesity, we don't have to then potentially need medication for cholesterol, diabetes. You can honestly like reverse some of it, at least for a lot of people. And so, yes, it may be a little bit of a trade-off, but we want to kind of really, really like drill this in today that this is a chronic disease. When we talk about temporary treatment of it, we are also stigmatizing the disease. Right? Because this is a disease. What the way society talks about it is that it's a disease of vanity. It's not. This is a neurohormonal disease. So when we, same as like, you know, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, those are actually all mediated by hormones and other substances in our bodies. So when we talk about treatment long term, that's exactly the same as any other of these other chronic conditions.
Yeah. I mean, society has really just, you know, like perpetuated the drop 10 pounds quick narrative, you know, and that's just not.
And if you see an advertisement for something like that, like, please run. Like that's not a reasonable tested mechanism to lose weight. There's zero quick fixes around this. I'd rather someone lose 10 pounds over a year rather than doing like a random diet and lose it in a month or two.
Because what ends up happening is what, you know, what's called yo-yo dieting. You might lose some weight, you come back up, you might lose some weight. And then that just, unfortunately, can be really demoralizing for an individual. It can get difficult for them to, you know, improve their health, can affect their mental health. I think that's like very important here. And really disrupt their relationship that they're having with food. I mean, we have to eat to live. Like there's no way around it. And a single day is a struggle because you're constantly, you know, having to have this battle. Like it's just... it's exhausting.
Before we kind of get into some of the specific questions, I do want to also touch base on side effects of the medication. So we've talked about a lot of the benefits and the way that the medications work. One of the common side effects is GI distress. You know, that's one of the number one reasons as to why someone might stop the medication would be like nausea, vomiting, stomach upset, you know, constipation, things like that, like dyspepsia. And so GI complaints are the number one reason why one would stop one of these medications like semaglutide or tirzepatide. Some of the oral medications, such as, you know, phentermine, topiramate, bupropion, naltrexone, that's called Contrave. One of those medications, you know, you could have palpitations, you could have insomnia, you could have dry mouth. And so, you know, we have to sort of make sure, like, is this patient safe to take this? What are the side effects? And truthfully, if you're not feeling good on the medication, at the end of the day, these are elective medications. And it's not something that, you know, you should feel miserable using, right? So if people aren't feeling well on a medication, this is not mandatory to take long term. And we can try to figure out another solution for you. So it's really important to have this conversation with your doctor. You know, these are the other medications I take. These are my, you know, there are other diagnoses I might have. And, you know, if the medication sits well with you, great. If not, then, you know, we might need to go back to the drawing board and figure out like what might work well. But, you know, we're seeing so much in this, in the, you know, again, social media. I mean, we have 20 years experience with these medications. Some patients might be better candidates for the medications than others, but this, like all this stuff, like, oh, this medication gave me gastroparesis and stuff. That doesn't happen, you know? And if you don't feel well on it, then you should have stopped. Right. And so that's like, that's kind of the approach on that.
I want to also just really, before we get to questions, touch on the other medications that we use for weight management. And we're not going to be able to do this justice in this like short amount of time, but yeah, like just know that
we need like part 3, 4, 5. I think
there are other medications for weight management that are oral medications that you take by mouth. And so some of the ones that are maybe we use more commonly in women transitioning or individuals transitioning to menopause is Qsymia and phentermine. And so Qsymia is a brand name for a medication that has two different components. One is phentermine and one is topiramate. And these medications have been around for a really long time. In fact, phentermine was one of the, you know, like the first approved medication for weight management back in the 1950s. And we're still using it to this day. You know, it's a medication you take daily. We start at the lowest dose and we up titrate to the highest dose based on an individual's response. You know, Dr. Narang and I like to keep our patients on the lowest efficacious dose that's working for them. We're not trying to, you know, like put you on more medication than you need. And so this is a medication that's an option for many individuals. It's cheaper. Even there's a special program.
Out of pocket.
If you don't have insurance coverage for it, I'm not saying that this is cheap, but you know, you can actually get it for, it's $99 a month, I think, right?
Yeah, it's less than $100 a month.
Special program that's had. Yeah. If you actually take generic phentermine or generic topiramate, which we often have, you know, we often prescribe, those are both available as separate components. Those are really inexpensive medications. I mean, you know, even if your insurance doesn't cover phentermine, like it's really inexpensive out of pocket. And depending on your health history, obviously, again, you want to work with somebody who's going to assess your whole picture and not just hand medication and send you out the door. Right.
You know, one other thing, since we're talking about like therapies for weight management, we don't want to discount bariatric surgery either. That is also a very, very powerful resource to help with long-term weight management, just like medication. And potentially for severe obesity, that's the best therapy out there. So, you know, again, surgery is not seen as a failure of lifestyle and medication. For some patients, that might be the best option available. And that's also a perfectly reasonable approach to take as well, given the right situation.
Yeah, I just want to really emphasize that sometimes the like bariatric surgery is seen as extreme, but I really want to put this in context for everybody, okay? You know, bariatric surgery can actually prevent other huge complications down the line. For instance, one of the most common causes of liver transplant in this country is actually a type of liver disease that's associated with obesity. And you could actually prevent that from happening. You may be able to prevent heart disease from happening later. You may be able to prevent, you know, limb amputations happening from uncontrolled diabetes. So like, let's put this in context when we're talking about, you know, what when people say bariatric surgery is extreme, like, it can really improve people's quality of life and health outcomes under the right, like, appropriate care, right?
Again. Right. Yeah. Like, we've seen people in our clinic regain weight after they had surgery 10 years ago. So just like a resource like medication, we have to be maintaining like our day-to-day lifestyle to have surgery work long-term for us. There is literally zero magic fixes. And that's where discussions become important, because it's not just Ozempic that fixes everything. And because everybody's hearing that and on social media and everyone wants it, there's like several other mechanisms to help people get weight off long-term in a successful way. And the way I often think of it is that, you know, if you've been struggling for however many decades with obesity, any of these treatments, that means that we get to buy back years of your life later. So I could care less about what you're going to look like in 3 months. I care about what you're going to be like in 25 years, because this is long-term. And that's where like lifestyle becomes so, so important, because yes, we have these amazing resources, but if you are eating in a certain way and you can actually picture yourself eating that in the next 20 to 25 years of your life and being satisfied, well, we've got a great solution here, right? We've got a really great plan for you ahead. However, if you tell me, oh, I'm going to do the whole 30, I'm going to lose this and this weight, I mean, in my head, I'm like, well, good luck. I'll see you back in a couple of weeks when this is like difficult to sustain, right? So we got to figure out like, what are you going to be able to do for 25 years, make it consistent and make it sustainable.
The other thing I want to say about bariatric surgery, just real quick, is that the most common procedure is a gastric sleeve, and it's safe. Look, it's like the complication rates of a gastric sleeve are no more than like topic gallbladder removal. So it's really, you know, the technology has evolved. I mean, we're doing these procedures at major centers like on the regular. And so again, don't let anyone tell you that it's too extreme. It's just not.
Yeah. And again, the whole like extremity part of this, like with treatment and surgery, it literally goes back to the stigma around obesity, right? Like, again, no one's going to bat an eye to getting heart surgery. Obviously that's for different causes, but like, it's going to help your heart. Weight management surgery is going to help your weight, which might actually save your heart in the long term. So it's really, really, the stigma is so pervasive, and it's really important that we start to shift kind of the societal emphasis on it.
Are there any contraindications to medications with inflammatory bowel disease? And I will say that there's no like hard contraindications. However, if somebody has uncontrolled inflammatory bowel disease, especially if we're using medications like, you know, Wegovy or Zepbound, we want to make sure that those GI symptoms are under control. Like, we really want to use medications and controlled inflammatory bowel disease, because God forbid if you start developing GI symptoms, like, we're not going to really know if it's a medication or are you having
disease. Yeah.
Of course, like, you don't want to start this medication if you're feeling ill, if you're losing weight, you know, because of the flare from the disease. Like, that's not a healthy way to lose weight. No. So there's no hard contraindications. Conversation with your doctor or healthcare provider. You know, I work with the GI doctors all the time when I have patients with IBD. We make sure that we're all on page when we start treatment. And so, you know, just want to have that conversation. Yeah. So not,
and that's the thing. Like, some patients might be better candidates to start than others. And it totally depends on the level of control, you know, how well controlled their symptoms might be. Somebody from the Perry community had asked, if a strict clean diet doesn't help to lose weight, what are the best options to move the scale? I feel like my body is broken. Well, you know, you are in good company. This is a very, very common question. Our hormones and physiology in the setting of menopause really affect, you know, just like the way that we gain weight and lose weight, right? So the testosterone levels go up, the estradiol levels go down, the belly fat starts. And so a common question that we get is that, oh, I'm eating super clean. And I, you know, no matter what I do, no matter how much exercise I do, I'm still, you know, I'm not losing any weight. Again, this goes back to physiology. So I'll let you take that question and field it because I think, you know, this is a super, super relatable issue.
When an individual is transitioning into menopause, like when the estradiol level is going down, you have a repartitioning of body fat from what's called subcutaneous stores to the abdomen. And so it's, again, not in your head. It's not, you know, something that you've made up. And so we just want to really validate that that's happening and that you're not doing anything wrong. And you should continue, absolutely continue trying to eat as healthfully as you possibly can mm-hmm. and really incorporating that physical activity. And I do want to mention that something that's really important, no matter how an individual decides to lose weight, whether that be with lifestyle alone, bariatric surgery, medications, obviously combination of these things, is that we really want to try to preserve as much lean muscle mass as possible. Thank you for your question, Delisa, because this is a really important question. It's the fat loss that we're targeting. We don't want you to lose bone mass and lean muscle mass. And how we do that or how we mitigate that is having adequate protein intake, which is going to be a very individualized goal combined with strength training or what we commonly know as resistance training. I will argue that that is one of the most important things that individuals can do as they're transitioning into menopause. If you don't have a routine, like, you know, really trying to find that activity that you like, it's really important. We lose muscle as we get older, which causes a lot of other problems. So please be very,
and also, just weight loss in general causes muscle loss. And so, you know, the medications that we currently have FDA approved, they're showing less and less lean muscle mass loss, right? And some of the medications that we actually have in the pipeline are going to be more muscle preserving. So it's an exciting time to be a weight management specialist because there is a lot of cool stuff in the pipeline that potentially will have, you know, even greater effect on long-term weight loss. But the muscle preservation is a big part of this. And so with, you know, any sort of weight loss, muscle loss is, you know, a common thing. And that's where, you know, constant, like sustainable resistance exercise becomes that much more important.
And I want to also say that as an individual is transitioning into menopause, you can have these really debilitating symptoms that can make it very difficult for you to exercise or do strength training. And so it's really important to talk to your doctor or healthcare provider about getting hormone therapy or what's commonly known as hormone replacement therapy for those symptoms, right? We want to make sure that those are under control so that you can continue doing all of the things that you need to do. Like, so somebody asked about, like, you know, kind of medications and hormone replacement therapy and like for medications for women. And I mean, we have patients on hormone replacement therapy and
all the time.
There's no like contraindication to that.
So. Right. Right. And there's a question here. What are the effects of weight loss medication like Wegovy on hormones and bones? There's not necessarily too much of a relation there. In fact, you might feel better because, you know, you're able to get the weight off. You feel more toned potentially if you're ongoing with resistance exercises. And, you know, with bone loss, it's not so much the Wegovy or anything that has anything to do with bone loss. It's the fact that someone's transitioning into menopause. So that alone causes bone loss. And so, you know, this is, gosh, a whole other topic, but we need to make sure that you are on calcium, you're taking vitamin D, and that helps to prevent bone loss. Again, resistance exercise is a major component of that.
Yeah, I did actually, because I saw that question, I did look to see if there was any literature out there. There really isn't.
The other is that we talked about this already, but like what happens when you go off of the medication, like off of weight loss drugs, are they a lifetime commitment? So again, let's come back to this, that these are long-term chronic medications, just like cholesterol medication might be, or just like blood pressure medication might be. So when we take off our medications for diabetes, blood pressure, and cholesterol, what happens? All those things go back up. So when we take off our weight medication, weight what goes back up as well. There are some studies ongoing to understand, you know, can we maintain that weight loss if we start to decrease the dose of it? However, anecdotally, over and over again, you know, this is the number one question I get as well. Like, how long do I have to be on this? And what happens when I come off? Because one, obesity is stigmatized, or weight gain is stigmatized, and people want it to be a quick fix. The other is that when we stop the medication and cold turkey stop it, you're going to go up. And the other thing I've noticed is for patients who, you know, I've tried to go down on the dose, and some patients might tolerate it. So again, everybody's different, but others who I have tried to decrease the dose on, they immediately see an increase in their appetite again. And so again, you're taking off the suppression on the hunger hormone. So when we stop that suppression, well, our hunger hormone gland goes up. That's why we regain our hunger, regain our weight.
Yeah. And if you, I mean, this has been, you know, shown in clinical trials, really controlled situations where, you know, everyone's following a diet and exercise, there's that majority subset of people that are going to regain the weight. I mean, again, this has to be done under medical supervision. So like, it's a conversation with your doctor. Like, if you're really like I just want to be on the lowest dose possible, or I really want to try to get off of this medication for whatever reason, then that's a conversation to have with your doctor. Because the last thing that Dr. Narang and I want is that somebody stops at cold turkey, gains weight, feels ashamed, and doesn't come back. It's challenging. They've struggled so hard with this their entire life, and we want to be that safe haven for them. We don't want them to feel like they can never come back.
Right. And you know, and it's not always progress too, right? Life gets stressful. You know, things happen. I mean, pandemics happen. And I had lots of patients that regained weight while on medication, you know, at the height of the pandemic. And they came back afterwards, getting back on the wagon to restart that lifestyle. And so again, the medication at the end of the day is just a resource. But sure, it can be a powerful resource, and the sustainability and consistency of both the lifestyle and medication together is where we see, you know, that long-term success. There was a question here, how to lose weight without medication during perimenopause, recommended supplements and vitamins. There are no supplements or vitamins approved for long-term management of weight. None. Supplements are also not FDA approved. So you could go into GNC, spend hundreds of dollars every month, you know, to get some fancy supplement or whatever that, you know, advertises weight loss. And it's literally money down the drain. I will be so clear, like cut and dry about this. There is nothing approved. And the other is that there's often several side effects linked to some of the popular weight loss, you know, supplements that we hear about. Liver failure being one of them. And that's scary to me.
No, it's scary. And there was actually a study that was done like several years ago that looked at different kind of popular weight loss supplements. And what they realized is that they were tainted with other substances or medications that people didn't know about, like other hormones like testosterone.
Like thyroid hormone. Like, I mean, you can become thyrotoxic on those things. You can be in the ICU with an arrhythmia when, you know, if there's been something laced with like thyroid hormone. Like, and we see this commonly.
People think that supplements are natural and so they're safer, but they're actually not, and they can cause harm. Drugs can get recalled. Like supplements, they're dime a dozen. They just
zero regulation of it. And again, like trying to say that, like, you know, weight management without medication or recommended supplements, we're again weighing into the stigma around obesity. Right? This is a disease that deserves treatment just like any other. And if you're able to do that with dietary pattern and exercise, good for you. But that is not the majority of this country.
How do you ensure you're getting enough calories when on medications due to the suppression of appetite? So yes, that's a really good question. Mm-hmm.
Tie this question to the how much protein goal.
Protein is very important in weight loss and long-term weight management because it can help with keeping you satiated when combined with resistance training can prevent that lean muscle mass loss. This hasn't really been studied. There's no ideal like study for this, but usually we try to aim for, you know, 1 to 1.2 grams per kilogram of kind of, I hate the word ideal body weight, but that's what's used. And, you know, hopefully your doctor can help you or a dietitian can help you figure that goal out right throughout the day. I don't want anyone becoming, you know, like protein obsessed or thinking if I didn't get 120 grams exactly of protein a day that I'm going to lose a bunch of muscle. Like counting and tracking can be very like mentally
anxiety provoking, anxiety provoking. You know, and that's why we often say like quality over quantity.
Yeah. The quality sources. So if somebody's eating animal protein, we really want to kind of choose the leaner cuts of animal protein. I'm a big fan of getting plant protein on your plate. So, you know, get some variety, get lentils, beans. People may not like tofu, edamame. Like there's all different kinds of options.
Any of those things.
And protein's present in basically every single food to varying degrees. Not don't go get your protein from like spinach or lettuce. Sometimes supplements are appropriate. I mean, a lot of our patients can't meet their protein goals with food alone, and we may have to supplement a smoothie with protein powder that has, you know, some fruits and vegetables and also a healthy fat and a protein powder, not just like straight fruit and vegetables, because that's not going to keep you as full. So that's number one. And number two is that the inter-individual variability definitely exists in the appetite suppression. Some patients may not have as strong of appetite suppression as other patients. And so I always tell my patients, the goal is not to make you stop eating, but we are going to be changing your dietary pattern to include more health-promoting foods. So sometimes getting intentional about eating throughout the day.
And especially when we start to pair our proteins with high fiber, like for example, if you do eat, you know, animal-based products like a salmon and vegetables, high protein, high fiber, that's going to be likely to keep you fuller for longer. If you're eating a salad, the way that you can add in protein, like think about chickpeas, think about black beans, eggs, you know, a thing of tuna, grilled chicken. So there's your protein, there's your fiber. So the more you're doing that, the fuller you're going to feel.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, when we, I mean, again, we're not counting calories, but we look at the full 24 hours, all of those kinds of combinations combined are probably going to end up being less in lower in calories than, you know, eating that like takeout or, you know, drive through meal or whatever that might be. So again, quality over quantity really adds up to actually be less than what the average person who's not really paying attention to what they're eating may take in.
And then also don't forget hydration. Like, again, appetite suppressant, you know, you may not feel as thirsty. And so you definitely want to be mindful of keeping that water around so that you're staying hydrated as well. So
the other thing actually I want to just interject is that plateau is a normal phenomenon as well. It's not always a downhill slope with weight loss, right? And so eventually you may plateau, but weight maintenance is still success versus what it may have been previous to potentially starting therapy. So I have this commonly in my clinic as well, that patients will come in really frustrated, like, well, I haven't lost any weight in 2 months. Well, plateau is a normal thing, right? And we can certainly optimize, you know, what they're doing day to day and like that sort of thing. But it may not necessarily mean like, oh, I need to go up on medication. So please check in with your doctor. But plateau and weight maintenance as just as much of a success as like constant, you know, as weight loss. Yeah.
Remember, this isn't just about the trajectory, like losing the weight. It's about keeping the weight off long term. So that's really, we know that there's probably a lot of questions that we weren't able to answer, and you'll be able to drop them into the Perry community.
Yes, so please let us know what questions you have. And someone actually just texted here that I have seen lots of RDs promote mineral cocktails with magnesium and potassium. How do you guys feel about that when it comes to hydration? Just eat your fruits and veggies, like
water.
Eat like a healthy diet. Yeah. Like, yeah. Drink your water. Like, you don't have to add any of this stuff into your food. Like, if you're eating normal fruits, veggies, lean proteins, you're getting exactly what you need. You don't have to be spending that extra money on like all these supplements and things. And there will be lots of people on social media that promote various like detoxes and cleanses and supplements and things like that. Always, always question, you know, the validity of it.
And it happens less likely from healthcare professionals, but just be wary.
Yeah. So evidence-based is the way to go. We're just so honored to be able to speak with all of you and to answer your questions and to bust some myths, because I think it's just especially around this topic. And so if you all will have us back, we are more than happy to continue answering your questions. Please post them in the Perry community, and we'll definitely get to them soon.
Yeah. Thanks so much, everyone.
Yeah.
Take care and have a great rest of your weekend.
Okay. Take care. Bye.
Thank you for listening to our Perimenopause What the F podcast. The perimenopause journey can be lonely, and it doesn't have to be that way. Make sure to download our free Peri app to connect with perimenopause warriors in the same stage of life. See you next time, Peri sisters.